Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Find your happy. Keeping your happy. Those are the topics tonight on Surviving Head Trauma. I'm Terry Smith, your host, and we're waiting on our co-host, Michelle. She'll join us shortly, and we're on the Brain Injury Radio Network. Welcome to another month. Whether it's morning, noon, or night, wherever you are on our lovely planet, our spaceship soaring through space, we welcome you and wish you love. And we would like to welcome you to another episode of us talking about brain trauma and all the things that include brain trauma. I think we have our co-host. Let us bring her on the air. Hello, Michelle. How are you this month?
Hello, Terry. How are you doing today?
Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful day. We're celebrating another month. Another month we've made it through this journey of life, and now we're talking about it once again on the fourth Thursday of each month. Yes.
Yep.
How are you?
Oh, gosh. I've had, you know, a very busy month, but I'm great. I'm happy. And just doing what I do, working, meetings, talking with you. It's the same old thing. Nothing really exciting has happened. I did have one exciting thing last week, but it wasn't just, I don't know if I should talk about it. We'll talk about it later. But I'm good.
Well, I'm curious now. You've aroused our curiosity. What was this
a
big life-changing event?
No, it wasn't really life-changing. It was very interesting, very stressful for me for a moment there. My son almost choked on the water bottle, the cap on the water bottle.
That's right.
Yes.
Oh,
yes, and so on Thursday, I spent the evening in the ER because I was a bit afraid. At one point, he couldn't breathe, so we went to the ER, and they checked to make sure nothing was blocking the airway, and actually, he had swallowed it, and throat was really irritated, but I used Dr. Google that gave me all the bad scenarios. So in the end, the cap was expelled in the ER, and we went home with a bit of mouthwash and something to gargle with.
How did they expel it? What was it, the Heimlich maneuver?
Well, I tried that at home. I think it dislodged maybe from his airway, but then he was kind of gasping and he swallowed it. So in the emergency room, he just felt really sick, and I think it was just kind of irritating his throat, and he ended up being sick, and he said, "Oh, Mom, it came up." And I thought, oh my gosh, that's the happiest feeling, you know, just to be able to leave the ER because there were so many bad pathways that it could have taken. It could have blocked his long airway, block the esophagus, block the colon, block the, you know, just different things and perforated things. Those little edges on the caps are not necessarily sharp to our fingers, but on your inside internal organs and your digestive system, it can cause damage. So other than
that's
a sore throat.
That's a good point for us to bring up about being choking, because that could happen. I mean, if it's never happened to you, you can't believe the fear that goes through. It happened to me a couple of times, and I tell you, it's frightening. You can't breathe. I mean, fortunately, your son was able to get air through a passage, but it's something that makes you want to learn CPR, or at least some type of Heimlich maneuver or something to dislodge choking, because it can happen almost any. You could choke on almost anything that you're eating.
Right.
Or
and
playing
you
within your mouth,
well,
in this case.
Yeah, I think he hasn't confessed, but I think he was trying to open the bottle with his mouth, you know, with his teeth. And, you know, that's not a good idea. However, it happened. I think that's what he was doing. And I think with squeezing the water bottle at the same time, or it was like really tight, just the cap became loose enough and he was squeezing hard enough that the cap
pressure
just was propelled into his mouth.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even, you know, you can't, it was kind of like a freak accident. But
well, thank goodness he's okay.
Thank goodness he's okay. And
send a shout out to your son. Yes. Cheers to you not chewing on bottle tops. Don't play with bottle tops in your mouth.
We tell him. We
open
him
it with your hand. Yes.
The teeth are not, the teeth are jewels, not tools. That's what our dentist says. Your teeth are jewels. Yeah. But this is my older son. You know, he's like 16. So that kind of, that was something that you kids, no, he's 16. He's a big guy.
I don't think there's an age limit for us doing silly things sometimes, so we have to keep an eye on each other throughout the rest of our journey on this spaceship.
No, if you watch the news, then yes, you will see many silly things.
Yeah.
Usually they're in Texas. Texas has a silly Texas guy doing crazy stuff. There's a Florida man, too.
Now, is this reference to the news that I'm not up on? What, or is this
no, I just
social
think
media?
That they're silly. People do silly things. You know, they go to the beach or somewhere. And just people are not really. I think it's all over.
Well, we have to look out for each other.
But
that's, I think,
right.
The purpose here is to look out for each other. And,
right.
And give credit where credit is due. In fact, that's what we have not done. We'd like to welcome our audience to another month, yes. But we'd also like to thank the people who make this broadcast possible. Craig Cecilia, the network owner, thank you. Kim Justice, she's the station manager, and she also hosts the show every Wednesday, Recovery Now. And another episode you want to catch out on this network is Moving Forward with Kelly KJ Jones and Dr. Valentina. They were on the third or fourth Sundays of each month. So thank you guys for making the network work every night of the week. You can find a different show. Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to reach us on the phone, you may dial us in country code 1, area code 424-243-9540. And if you'd like to speak with us, press 1 once you are connected, because that'll raise a little hand on my switchboard, and I don't know that means you want to speak. So give us a call tonight. We have a guest tonight, Michelle. We have a special guest from actually a couple of months ago. She was only on for a few minutes. She called just before we were about to end the show, and we invited her back, and she is returning tonight, Kelly McClintock. She's the author of Find Your Happy, 30 Life-Changing Keys. And I've highlighted about 8 or 9 of them or so that we're gonna ask her to elaborate and try to help us get out of our issues and into the world of happiness and stay there. How do we sustain it? In fact, that was our opening word. Find your happy and then keeping your happy. So that's our night. That's our topic tonight. Unless you call in and want to change, remember, we're flexible. We roll with the flow. That's our direction tonight, but we can deviate a little bit. We'll come back on track. So whatever you want to talk about, you call us tonight. We're flexible like that. Right, Michelle?
Right. Yes, very much so. But happy is a great place to start.
Happy is a great place to start.
I love happy.
Happy.
Yes.
In fact,
we didn't finish with Kelly last time.
No, she called in at the end of the show.
It was really getting good.
Yeah, she's going to go much more detail tonight and give us more information about each section. Well, not each. She's there 30 concepts she discusses.
Yeah.
Highlight.
We'll have to have her back again.
Well,
we'll have to have her back, maybe, you know, because that's 30 is quite a bit. We don't have that long. And then
I delve into something. Yeah, I've highlighted a few here, like 5, 6, 7, 8 or so. So when she calls in, we'll drill her on those. I meant to send you a note to tell you what we were doing tonight, but life has been so busy. It seems like everybody's moving. Everybody's selling and buying, and it's just a busy world happening all around us at all times.
Yeah, it's super, super busy markets. The rates are going up. The gas, interest rates are going up.
Inflation's insane.
Fuel is high. Inflation is insane. School's out, for
tomorrow's the last day, isn't it?
School depends on where you are. Some counties have another week or so, and so I think this is but then we've got Memorial Day coming up. We've got lots of things. Monday.
This coming Monday? This is Thursday night. Yes. So Monday the 30th. May 30th.
It feels like Friday to me today. Today feels like Friday. I sat by the pool today.
It's a weekend thing, so I can see that. Yeah. Well, I want to let you know, listening audience, that this show, Surviving Head Trauma, is not just a podcast and radio broadcast. It is also a book that you can order anywhere books are sold, Surviving Head Trauma. And you can find all of our podcast archives and all my work on my website, terrysmithsbooks.com. And you can also visit Surviving Head Trauma, the Facebook page on Facebook, which is a daily uploaded site where we keep everybody informed or uplifted or inspired or somehow motivated to continue in this journey of ours on this spaceship. So Surviving Head Trauma, remember, you can find us on Facebook, my website, and the book, anywhere books are sold, Surviving Head Trauma.
Oh.
So, Michelle,
yeah.
Our friend Angela is not going to join us tonight.
Okay. Well, I thought she's been busy. Remember,
she was supposed to start the 15-minute.
No, she's got things to do.
She was going to do the segment tonight. Remember the 15-minute segment or so towards the end of the show?
Oh, yeah,
but
catch up.
Yeah, she called in and said, text me and said that she was not feeling well. So, listening audience, next month, she promises to come back on the air and give us a little lively conversation about what's happening in her world.
And the world of Angela.
World of Angela. Angela's world. Yes.
Yeah. So, Angela, she's going to have two or three months to fill us in because at one time she was in California and we missed her and just kind of
she's been sick.
Of all over the place.
Yeah, she's had family illness, so she's been, we haven't seen much of her on air, but we will hopefully get her soon. So.
Yeah, well, we're sending prayers and good wishes to her. Get well, get healed, and get happy.
And, maybe she'll listen to the episode and become happy. And not choke on water bottle cap.
The water bottle cap.
Right. We don't want to do that. We must use our hands to open our water bottles.
Right. That's right.
So,
other than that, what's happening with you? You haven't filled us in on anything you want to discuss or where you've been or where you're going.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know, Michelle. So much.
You
know, I just don't know if I should talk about that kind of stuff on air. You think I should? Is that air quality?
No, you can talk about what you want to talk about. We're flexible. I was going to go to my trip to Colombia was canceled. I was going to go to Colombia.
Really?
Yes. So
for fun or for work or for something else?
Fun.
For fun.
Yeah, just for fun. So I've got another. I'll be in Toronto, something a little bit closer to home. I'm going to go to Toronto next month. So actually I planned on going to Colombia today, but it did not pan out. My friends, my travel companions did not secure the things that were supposed to. It just didn't work out.
Does that mean that we would not have had you on the air with us if you had gone?
It depends on my connection. Depends on if I had what the internet was like.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could have called
because,
or used the internet.
Yes, I could have called in, yeah.
The marvels of...
And so next month I'll be in Toronto, so I'll call. I may not. I've got some business up there, so I may not call.
You may not call? No, you cannot do that. You must call. But listen, is this traveling for your happiness? Are you searching for happiness? Is that what you're doing?
I sure am.
You are?
And I've never been
Guess
to
what?
Toronto.
I have great news
yes.
for you. What? What? What
I
that?
Said I've never been to Toronto, so that's kind of fun. We've got some things planned up there, so I'm going to see family and different things. So it's going to be happy.
Finding
it's
happiness.
A happy time.
Good. Because mm-hmm. I've got good news. I have good news for you. And that is that we have the author of Find Your Happy on the switchboard. She gave me her phone number. Yes. So she gave me her phone number, so I see it. So I see you out there, Kelly. We're about to bring you on the air, so get ready. Get ready,
Kelly,
audience.
Kelly,
we're about to bring Kelly McClintock
Kelly.
Online on the air.
Kelly.
Yes.
Kelly.
Finally, you're happy. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Hi, Terry. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. How are you doing today?
So good. How about you?
Yeah, great. You sound so chipper, happy. I can
are
hear a
happy?
Smile in your voice.
I'm glad I do because it's kind of a little past my bedtime. So I'm having a little cup of tea and trying to stay up with you guys tonight.
Okay. Well, we appreciate that because we have a lot of questions for you tonight. Well, a lot.
Okay.
Enough to satisfy our audience with some of the content of your book and encourage them to go out and purchase it so they can get the other life-challenging keys. What we've done is we've picked out a few of the keys that you've listed that we're going to talk about tonight. But before we begin with all that, why don't we let you tell our audience about yourself again? You were on our show briefly a couple of months ago at the end of the show, but not long enough to really, really tell us a lot and get to know you more. So give our audience a little more of your backstory and how you came to write this book, Find Your Happy.
Okay, sure. So I've always kind of been interested in the topic of happiness because I'm a licensed counselor, and just as a human being, we're all kind of interested in being happy. And I spent most of my career working in the criminal justice system, and so jail's a pretty unhappy place. And so I just really kind of began to study happiness, and I had kind of been thinking about writing a book for a long time, and I had been kind of collecting some data and things like that. And, you know, I just really realized that, you know, it's our most important life's work is to be happy, whether you're one of my clients, an inmate in the jail, or whether you're an executive somewhere. It's relevant to everybody. Everybody wants a piece of that happiness. So I'd been thinking about this book for a long time, and honestly, personally, I had always been a pretty happy person. And we talked before until 2014, when we had, you know, my family had a real crisis occur. My 11-year-old son at the time, healthy, active 11-year-old, was complaining of leg pain. And what we thought was a pulled muscle or a sports injury turned out to be a Ewing sarcoma tumor on his left femur. And so in that moment, it was like my world just stopped, you know, and the world stopped spinning on its axis. And for the first time, really in my life, I felt a darkness that I just really hadn't felt before. And I felt very robbed of my happiness. And more important than that, I really realized that there was this mind-body connection. And I wholeheartedly always believed that, you know. And so I knew that love and fun and happy were probably going to be the very best medicine for my son, and how important it was just to kind of keep his spirit in the right place. And so in the midst of kind of all of that chaos that was going on in this diagnosis, I started to kind of funnel through those tidbits of data that I had that I was collecting. And I put together a book just for my family, you know, like a makeshift book. And we started just kind of reading at the dinner table and doing exercises and meditating together and praying together and vision boards together. In fact, I'm staring at the vision board we made in 2015 we made a vision board, and it still hangs on my wall today. But it really, it turned out to be a game changer for us. Just practicing all of these little, you know, tweaking our happiness made all the difference, I think, and really affected our outcomes. And so I like to write, and we thought other people may benefit from this as well. And so I put pen to paper, and it eventually morphed into the book that you guys have read.
Well,
wow.
How's your son?
Journey.
And with a tumor, what's the course now? How is he?
My son is a walking miracle. You know, you would never know by looking at him today what he went through. He's a college student, getting ready to apply to graduate school, PT school, healthy and well, and we feel so blessed. There's not a day that goes by. I can't look at him and not realize, you know, and not be just completely filled with gratitude. It never escapes me how grateful I am.
Well, Kelly, that means that you really can identify with our audience, because most of our audience has some experience with some life-changing, debilitating. Well, we are the Brain Injury Radio Network. That kind of puts it in a nutshell for you. So you can, I think, have the empathy to understand what we're going through, since your son had such a brush, if you will, with such a severe episode in life.
Life-changing,
especially so young. Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, I think that you've done a good job of letting us know who you are and what motivated you to start this book. But in the book, you list 30 key paths, or 30 life-changing keys, and it's a holistic approach to get your happy on. So you can find this book, I guess, Amazon, anywhere books are sold, I suppose. And we will now talk about play number 2 in your book, which is find your passion, your calling. Now, for someone who's just had a brain injury and trying to rediscover who he or she is, what do you do to tell that? How do you help that person find a passion or calling after their life may have been changed? They were maybe a pharmacist, for example, and no longer able to handle the complexities of pharmacy. So now discovering a new career or a new calling or passion, how do you get started with that? How do you do that to find your happiness? What do you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting that you say that, because, you know, when we were going through our diagnosis, my son had been a...
Kelly, I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Is your volume...
Oh, can you hear... Is that better?
Yeah.
A little.
Can you hear
Michelle?
I have on a headset.
I can hear.
So I... Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay.
I can.
Okay.
All right.
So I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, because when we were going through our diagnosis, my son had been a sports fanatic. He loved sports. He loved to play sports. He loved to watch sports. He just loved all things sports. And because of the leg issue, because he had the tumor on the leg, he ended up having to have surgery. He had a partial hip femur replacement. And they basically said, you know, you're going to walk, but you're never going to jump or run or do anything like that ever again.
Wow.
And it was like his identity was completely taken from him, because that was who he was. He's a little kid, and that's what was important to him at that time. And sports meant everything at that age, you know, to him at least it did. It was very, very important. And so I remember just having to sort of reframe everything for him and to say, all right, we're going to look at this through a little different lens, okay? There are these things we can't do anymore, or we can't do at least right now. And I kept trying to tell him, too, nobody knows what the future has. No one here on this earth is that special that they know that you're never going to do anything again. So let's not even put that on the table. But for now, let's say this. Here's a list of things we can't do right now. But let's look at this other list of things we can do now. Let's try to embrace something new, something that's equally fun, something that equally excites you, that makes you feel alive, just like sports did. And there's so many passions in life, you know, and so I tried to talk him into things like golf, which he had never entertained golf before, but it became something that he really loved and enjoyed, and he found a friend that enjoyed golf, and so he started to kind of be able to play golf. He did a lot of things that were, he started getting into the stock market, you know, which is like funny for a kid.
11 years old, or is this later?
Yeah, listen, this kid's more well invested, more so than I am now. I go to him for financial advice.
Okay.
But there were lots of things. He did a lot of the fantasy sports stuff and those things. So I would say just kind of shifting your perspective to look at what is available to you. Maybe you have to change your passion, but, you know, our passions run deep. And they do change over time anyway. They change with age, and they change with circumstance. So that would probably be what I would encourage those people to do.
Michelle, do you have a question for her regarding that? Because I have another one. I don't want to bombard her too many at once.
Well, yeah. We'll
take a shot.
Just by listening to her story, I'm hearing focus on what you can do and not what you can't do. So as a mom, we know our kids' abilities and limitations a little bit more than maybe what they do. And it's not for us to say, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that. Well, go ahead and try, you know. So I think Kelly really figured it out that, okay, the doctors really don't know for sure. This is what they're saying, but let's do what you can. And even though it was maybe a negative, the way the doctors laid it out was in a negative way. You can't do this. You can't run. You can't jump. You're not going to do your sports. All this, what you can't do, Kelly managed to say, let's see some sports that you can do that maybe aren't going to involve those things. And maybe after you're healed up, you can try some of the things you used to do. I don't know exactly what you said, but it sounds to me like you put a positive spin on the bad news, which could have been really devastating and probably was for your son to hear, since that was his
passion.
That was his world. Yeah, and she just kind of redirected just a little.
Right, and he did, interestingly, he went on to play varsity sports again, which they said he would never do, but he did. So he played varsity basketball, he played varsity baseball as well. So,
wow.
Pretty amazing, yeah.
Okay, so that's good. I mean, especially when you're so young, I think you're more resilient and you're more malleable and able to I think balance back or find your other passions, because you haven't really formed one. But what do you recommend for someone, say an adult who spent 20 years in let's say the police force as a police officer, or the military as a commanding officer, or whatever career is so long, and then a head injury happens, and they've had a life, they've had a calling, and their happiness has now been destroyed. How do we restore happiness and find a calling after we've had so much and lost it all?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same kind of thing. It's, again, just trying to kind of look at it through a little bit of a different lens, and maybe looking at what your alternatives are, and accepting that you're at a different stage of life, right? And that although we don't know what the future holds exactly, we're just going to be right here, right now, and we're going to do what brings us joy in this moment, you know. And I'm really glad, looking back, that that's the approach we took with him, because, again, for him, he ended up being able to gradually get back to playing sports. And was it where he would have been before? No, it certainly wasn't. But he was still able to engage, and he was still able to do other things that brought him joy in the moment. And so I'm glad we didn't spend our time worrying about what the future was going to bring, that we just decided to live in this moment and take advantage of what he was able to do in that moment. And again, passions are, they run so deep, and they're so widespread, and there's so many things that can bring you joy, or can make you feel utilized, or like you're using your gifts. Like you're talking about somebody who maybe had a career where they felt like they had found their niche and they were good at something, and you know,
yes,
they felt as though they were using their gifts and they had some purpose. You know, it does take a shift, right? A shift in your thinking, to entertain alternative routes. But again, different stages of life, you know, calls for those kinds of shifts, and just realizing and being grateful that you have the opportunity to make a shift. You're here, you're alive. I have an opportunity in front of me to live fully in this moment, and just choosing to do that.
So it sounds as if it takes just an enormous amount of willpower, mental strength, mental audacity to overcome what seems impossible.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Terry, because I was just thinking about the resilience of the brain, the ability to make different pathways and relearn things and heal itself. Your brain will make a new pathway when there's damage somewhere. So if you've got one part that's not working, you can maybe retrain where people learn to walk again, or they learn to talk again, or all these things that maybe you've lost through a brain injury. There's an alternate path that you can create to relearn that skill. And so it's just like what Kelly said she did with her son. He gradually relearned the skills that he had after the loss, after the injury. And it just took a shift. And sometimes it's a small shift, but of course with brain injury, it can be long work hours, just really difficult. But usually that work, the work will pay off, therapy and that type of thing. So I'm thinking that where Kelly shifted her son to some other activities, it probably kept him a little more active than maybe wallowing in misery or saying, I can't do this. He did something else and he was able to try it. And the same with your brain injury. You can't do the things you were doing before, but you can do different things and work your way back into it. And it may take a long time.
Now, Michelle, you just said something that's a key point. The part about instead of wallowing in the misery and the heartache and the heartbreak from what we've lost. The shifting part to the happiness is where I'm finding it is it so easy for us to just mentally decide to just be strong like that and find our happiness when we're so devastatedly heartbroken? I mean, is there some method that we can apply to overcome the pain of heartbreak? Because, I mean, for an 11-year-old, I can only imagine the passion is about 11 years old. But let's say you're an adult who's been in a career for 25 years. That pain is going to be
Kelly
a little
said.
More intense. So how do?
But like Kelly said, you age.
Same application.
Well, Kelly said you age and you change, and it's true. You can't do the same things that you were doing at 20. I'm not going to run any marathons anymore at my age. I'm not going to do certain things I was able to do before. So as your career changes, you change anyway with age. So, you know, maybe you're retired. Maybe you had something you were doing. You loved it. And you just have to be happy, shift slightly to do something else. Maybe teach someone else to do what you did or pass on some knowledge. You know, I don't know. Kelly can answer
you
that
know
better.
What? Kelly, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure what Michelle is saying is true. And I think, too, that when people are kind of faced with those challenges or having to put down something that they've found joy in previously, that sometimes it opens up new doors because, you know, there's lots of times where I hear people say, you know, I've always wanted to do something, but I never had the time or I never had the space in my life. And so sometimes there's these new opportunities that open, you know, in this really sort of strange way, right? And so I think people get this opportunity to just really take an inventory of what they've really wanted to do or what things bring them happiness, what things kind of make them really feel alive. It's those things that, you know, you lose track of time when you're doing it because you're just so involved in it, whether it's, you know, gardening or music or a hobby or business or teaching or art or, you know, whatever it is that brings you that kind of real intrinsic joy, it just gives us an opportunity to maybe deepen some of those interests. And so,
okay, well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think my takeaway from what you just said was to search ourselves after we've lost so much and find that thing that maybe the younger version of us always thought about, maybe wanted to do, but couldn't find somewhere inside of ourselves, something that we want to explore and explore it maybe enough to find joy and happiness in it. Is that?
Yes, exactly.
Pulling out.
Yes.
Cultivate. Cultivate.
That's it.
Find.
That
yeah.
Search your memories in your life.
Yeah, but it's all turning towards looking forward and not looking back, looking away from what you can't do and towards what you can. And it's just to me, it seems like it's just a shift, and it could be ever so slightly. And it's not ignoring the diagnosis or what the doctor says or the prognosis or whatever. But it's more focusing on, I'm in this spot. I think of life as a roller coaster. And there's ups and downs. And our goal, maybe in our happiness, would be to have the lows maybe not be so low. And maybe, you know, keep the highs when we're up. Enjoy that. So, I don't know. I just think maybe you're focusing on what you can do and positive alternatives. But she's really, really, I guess it's changing. You're not focusing on the negative thing or what you can't do.
Okay, so between the two of you, I'm hearing that we need to really open ourselves for something new. We have to let go. We must find a way to let go of holding on so tightly that we're not open for new. And then once we find the new, embrace it and pursue it and allow ourselves to find happiness again as it's possible. Is that it?
Yeah. I couldn't have said it better. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, then you know what? With that explained, you know what? Out of 30 key points, we've now explained, I think, our how we get ourselves back on track, because I think that's fundamental. And I jumped down a little bit. Let's say we've now gotten ourselves back on track after this trauma, and like with your 11-year-old son's tumor on his leg, and Michelle, your son's gagging on this bottle top. We've gotten over these things. We've gone through brain trauma, all those things. Gratitude. You talk about gratitude. Play number four, and mm-hmm. that's one of our keys. Life-changing keys. So how do you bring gratitude into the forefront of our life-changing keys to happiness?
Well, I think gratitude, you know, I say it's the fairy dust that really just kind of stokes our spiritual fire. It is, it's really a very profound spiritual practice when we are truly grateful. And when I say truly grateful, I think gratitude can be kind of complex. You know, people think it's, you know, I'm really grateful for these things in my life, but it's really much bigger than that. And it's, I'm grateful for everything in my life, and I'm grateful for what I have right now, the smallest of things, a beating heart, a safe home, the water I drink, but you know, the tiniest of things, the ordinary things. And also being grateful for even the difficult stuff, the really kind of crappy stuff that's going on. You know, recently, I lost my father recently, and I was really trying to stay in a place of gratitude, and it's really tough to do. It's so tough to do when you're going through something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But my attempt was to just be really grateful for the grief, because there was a realization that not everybody gets that privilege to experience that kind of grief, because they don't have the experience of loving deeply enough to have that. So, you know, to feel the loss, to feel the grief. And when you lose somebody that's wonderful and brought you such joy, you feel that, and so you got to kind of somehow take that back to gratitude that you got to have them.
Well, first of all, condolences for losing your father.
Yeah, thank you.
I understand. I lost mine at 9, and my mother 20 years ago, so I understand, and condolences. But you said something extremely profound just now that the gratitude for the pain. At first I thought, oh my goodness, how is she going to finish that sentence? But you did. Mm-hmm. You did finish that sentence, and it made sense. Not a lot of people have the opportunity to love so deeply that you would feel this kind of grief. Then there is a certain gratitude for that kind of love. That depth of pain comes from depth of love.
Right, and she's got the gratitude, the memory. Some people don't have Kelly said she had the bond with her father.
Yes.
People don't have the memories and the bond. You know, you remember these things and little things that he would say and do and all that, you know, just being grateful to say, you know, Dad gave me this necklace, or we went here and had ice cream, or I remember him teaching me to ride my bike. Little things that, you know, okay, it is devastating to lose someone that you care for. It's like a big hole. I just totally understand, you know, how that just feels. And you think, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to make it to tomorrow. right. You know, or the next day. And then you wake up, thank you, God, I'm here. But it's very difficult to navigate those losses. But again, you look towards, you're saying shift away from, not shift away from the grief, but you're sad, you have to address it, but also be thankful that you're able to survive, that you're alive, and that you're able to cope with
and
with
that you
that
had
situation.
The love. That you had the love that deep.
Yeah.
Right.
That it happened. But my question now is, now for something, now that was, you nailed that one, Kelly. That I like that, gave me a different view and perspective on dealing with that. But what about someone like in Ukraine right now, who hasn't lost a loved one but is losing their whole country, and they're going through so much? I know this is out of the blue here, and I kind of do that sometimes, go way out there. But what about that? I mean, there's what grief, how do you justify happiness? How can you say, okay, this all this war is around me and people are being killed all around, strangers, my neighbors, my family, my friends, but how do I get gratitude out of that?
Yeah, I mean, in those moments, right, those are the moments when it's so difficult. And we can sit and talk about those moments and, you know, it sounds so much easier than it is when it's actually happening. And so for
right.
those people who are going through something, you know, horrific right now, whether it's the people in the Ukraine or whether it's, you know, a loss, grief, diagnosis, depression, whatever it is that someone's going through, it's hard when you're sitting in that in the moment.
Right.
But it's always really just about being just coming back to, but I'm grateful to have this opportunity. There is always opportunity in it. I am honored to have lost my job because not everybody is alive to lose a job. I am honored to fight this disease because some people get hit by a bus and they don't get to fight a disease. You know, so whatever it is, when you look really deep and you sit and get still, there is always, always something to be grateful for. Not always easy to be grateful for it. Probably one of the common questions, most common questions I get asked is if I'm grateful for cancer. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that they are. Just, you know, you get to know a lot of people that have been in the same boat when you go through an experience like this. And I've heard that from a lot of survivors that they're grateful for it. And I have to say, I always very honestly say, I'm not. And so my humanity is such that I've just accepted that I'm not there yet. I know that, you know, there are things that it brought into my life. I can certainly see the lessons and some of the gifts that have come along because of that diagnosis. But it's really hard for me to feel grateful for something that caused my child such pain and continues
right.
to, you know, cause such devastation around the globe, you know. And,
right.
and perhaps
and
I'd
families.
Feel differently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to other families, to other people. And maybe I'd feel differently had it been me with the IV in my arm, but it didn't happen that way. And so it doesn't mean that I'm not grateful for some of the lessons. I mean, I'm certainly grateful for God's grace and growing closer as a family and having this conversation with you. You know, these things wouldn't be happening. The book wouldn't have happened. I mean, I do see those things. So I can certainly see those things, and I can certainly feel grateful for those lessons along the way.
Well, you mentioned something. Go ahead. Were you finished? I'm sorry.
But I still don't necessarily feel like I can say that I'm grateful for cancer. Those words may never grace my lips, and I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable with that. I'm just not there yet. Maybe I'll get there, maybe I won't, but I'm okay with it.
And, you know, maybe your son might be able to say those words. Cancer did open my eyes to these other opportunities. There, you mentioned,
right.
You know, thank God for something. And there is a scripture about adversity building character. Someone
right.
knows the Bible much better than I do. But there were different things that we can be thankful for, and the adversity builds strength. So I'm not
right.
saying I'm grateful for any cancer or anything like that. However, these diseases and adversity and difficult times teach us that we are stronger than we know.
Right.
We think we need that other person in our lives or our relationship or whatever it is, but you're a whole person on your own. And sometimes these situations that we find ourselves in, or difficult times, adversity, disease, illness, traumatic brain injury, all of these difficult, I would call it the bottom of the roller coaster, you know, you've got to go up. It's a
Michelle,
bad,
I think you
what are we going to learn?
You put it, I think you said something just now that triggered something in my brain. When you said,
okay.
yeah, when you said that you, oh gosh, I lost it, but you you had something you just said that made it make sense for the going through the hard pain,
the adversity,
the adversity.
Situation.
Yes,
yeah.
The strength. That's it. That's what it was. The gratitude comes from the adversity, that you have the strength to go through it, and it's making you stronger.
Right.
So you basically, between
yeah.
the two of you, I'm hearing we have to find a niche. We have to look for the positive in it to find. We have to look for what it's doing for us in a positive way. How is this doing, making us better? Somehow, no matter how adverse it is, if we find that angle, we can find
well,
the
right.
gratitude.
And like
right.
Kelly said, had her son not been devastated by this disease, then she wouldn't have had the book. Now, that's a leap, because in between the book and the disease was a lot of crying and upset and
anguish.
Why and questioning.
Yes.
Anger and anguish. And, you know, oh, what? Why me? Why did it happen to me? Why, you know, what did he do? What's going on? How are we going to get through this? So you're probably asking yourselves all these questions, and it's making your family stronger and opening certain doors and closing others. So the same with the job. I'm grateful to lose this job. Maybe not in the moment when I can't pay my rent or I'm struggling
right.
to put food on the table, but in the end, or maybe in a few years, when you're in a different position or a different job or making
mm-hmm.
four times the money you were making, those
right.
doors would not have been open for you had you stayed in that position. So we can't see the big picture sometimes, but
right.
that scripture just came to me when you said, oh, thank God for this, or I'm grateful for that. I just thought about how the downtimes and the adversity is not forever. A hurricane comes and it goes.
I like to use the analogy of the ocean, the tides, the waves. The tide
yeah.
comes in and it comes high sometimes. Sometimes it comes up on land, flooding. But it
right.
goes out. The tide goes out.
Right.
And it comes in. Life is like the ocean tide. It comes in, it goes out. It goes up, it flows. It ebbs and flows. But the reason I've chosen each top topic of your 30 keys is because I think that each one, I think, helps with our audience, particularly brain trauma survivors. And audience, listen, if you'd like to call and participate in this conversation, I'll give you the number again. It's country code 1 if you're not in the United States. If you are in the United States, it's area code 424-243-9540. And if you'd
I
like
see
to
my
speak.
LA friends are here.
Yeah, a lot of people
we've got
are
quite
on
a few
board,
calls
but,
today.
Yeah, we have a lot of
I
callers,
I
but If you'd like to speak, press 1. That way I'll know to bring you on the air, because otherwise you're just on the switchboard and I see your number there. I'd like to use the next 30 seconds, if you guys can hold on. We'd like to let somebody who can help our listening audience around the country in many different ways, Brain Injury Association of America. So for 21 seconds, let's just sit tight. Be right back.
If you've experienced a brain injury, you're not alone. For help, call the Brain Injury Association today at 1-800-444-6443, 1-800-444-6443, on the web at BIAUSA.org.
BIAUSA.org. Brain Injury Association of America has a chapter almost everywhere in the country, so if you are new to this world of brain injury and are surviving, you need help, Brain Injury Association of America will probably be in your area if you reach out to them, BIAUSA.org. So now our next topic for survivors, once we've found our passion and our calling and we're grateful for what we have, we find ourselves, a lot of us, alone, because for whatever reason, after brain trauma, we tend to either push people away or people tend to leave because they aren't patient or aren't tolerant or whatever it requires to deal with some of us. So we find ourselves alone. And one of your plays, play number 13, is Find Your Tribe. So with Find Your Tribe, how do you relate that to someone who's maybe a recluse because of brain trauma, maybe an agoraphobic person afraid to go out and meet people so easily? How do you find happiness if you're stuck in your house or your apartment?
Wow, Terry, you ask all the difficult questions tonight. I'm like, wow, that is a difficult question. When you're stuck at home like that after an injury or something like that, it is really difficult, and I know how that can become lonely. And again, there seems to be a great parallel between what brain injury survivors go through and what we went through with our diagnosis, because the same thing happened. You know, my son was little, and his friends wanted to be out doing things and playing things, and they kind of trucked on, you know, and he was kind of stuck in this position of, you know, going through treatment that lasted a year, you know. So it was a long duration, and so he, too, felt, I think, a bit lonely. He wasn't able to go to school. You know, sports came to a screeching halt. And so there can be a real sense of loneliness there. But I think just trying to put yourself in a position where you can meet people, and maybe people who are going through similar things, right, kind of the purpose of support groups and things like that can be incredibly helpful. And also going the extra mile to kind of reach out to existing friends, maybe doing more than you normally would to kind of facilitate and continue some of those friendships. But I think that there's just tremendous support groups out there for people where you can form, you know, real soulful connections and just kind of feel like you're not alone in the world. Right. It's amazing how just hearing me too, those words can be really consoling, and I think can just really forge bonds, you know.
So finding your tribe then doesn't necessarily have to be a group of people in person. It can be electronic, Zoom or online. Do you think that is enough, or does the human being need human contact more?
Well, I like human contact. I'm call me old-fashioned, but I do like some human contact. So, but I know that there's lots of ways to form bonds, and I know that, you know, I have friends who are long distance, and I tell you, when I Zoom with them, I do feel like I was there with them. You know, you can feel like you were really in the room with them. So I do think there's alternative methods now. I always caution people about Facebook friends and those kinds of things. I always say a friend is somebody who will come change a flat tire for you, you know? And if you can't call somebody for that, they bring you soup when you're sick. They come when you're stranded, you know? So you have to have some of those friends, because I think otherwise if we just have a lot of Facebook friends, those can feel kind of counterfeit at some point, right? So we have to really kind of forge some deep unions and fulfilling relationships, you know, there has to be sort of the personal touch, right? So,
right. I think you hit the nail on the head with the social media, that it can be a kind of an empty fulfillment. You know, oh, I've got all these likes or whatever. But like you said, if you don't have the chance to maybe have a cup of tea or look at the person or Zoom or whatever, it's quite difficult to say what your relationship, that you actually are friends.
Right.
That now in the COVID, we're still having COVID issues. I think people are expanding their understanding and meaningful relationships, what their contact with other people has changed over the past couple of years. I mean, people are working from home, their Zoom dates, Zoom meetings, all kinds of different things. I meet with my family twice a month, and we do a Zoom meeting. We've got Chicago, Texas, California, Colorado. We all get on a Zoom meeting. So,
and you guys are happy? You guys laugh and have a happy experience?
We laugh, we joke, someone's in the snow, you know, I've got a hat on and I'm freezing and the heat's on, and then someone's in Florida and then they're in Colorado playing golf and all kinds of different things. So the weather,
find you're happy.
We're happy to see each other. No one's sick. Everyone knows what everyone's doing. And it's helpful in that way. And when you can't see each other or travel to Chicago for the weekend or Texas for the week, the Zoom, the social media and all this electronic stuff really has brought people together that otherwise would be more isolated, as long as you're up on the technology.
Okay.
Right.
Well, Kelly, you're touching on some grounds here that I think that are extremely applicable to our, to especially our audience, but not just our audience. The mass agenda people probably have a little social. I don't know. I'm speculating, because I'm so much of a recluse myself. But I think a lot of people can identify with not being part of a tribe. Looking for finding the tribe. So I think you both hit on some key points that it can be done in person and maybe if electronically, then that's how it's done. But happiness is the ultimate objective. And Kelly, I don't know how much time we have with you, because I have quite a few more of your 30 to discuss. Can we keep you a little bit longer? I have a few more to ask you here.
Sure. I've got some.
Okay.
Of course.
Because I'm thinking, once you find your tribe, that, you know, the old saying, familiarity breeds contempt. Okay, you found your tribe. You're happy. you're grateful for all your tribe.
Way of looking at it.
You found your passion. Now these people are getting on your nerves, because play number 16 is reduce stress. How do you reduce the stress from all this social anxiety that you've built up from meeting all these people and hanging out and having fun? The stress.
Right. Don't meet them.
How do you reduce it? That's play number 16. So reduce stress to find happiness. How do we do that?
Well, I think the most important thing when you've got all those people in your life, you know, too much togetherness, you know, every time we go on a family vacation, I come back sometimes and I'm like, okay. That was a lot of togetherness.
That was intense.
Need a vacation.
Right. But I think having some boundaries is always helpful when it comes to your relationships, right? You know, so having your close associations and having an inner circle and an outer circle, which I talk about in depth in the book, and just making sure that you have some clear boundaries can be helpful in making sure that you don't kind of wear out some of those relationships, because we're all human, so we're going to have, there's going to be contention. If there is a close bond, there's going to be contention. It's just, it's a fact of life. And so in accepting that and even being grateful for some of those tiffs, right? Because again, some people don't have those, a close enough association with somebody to have some of those fallouts. And so just being being really mindful of how those relationships flow and kind of keeping some boundaries there. But you mentioned the chapter on stress. And I think in the stress chapter, I list a lot of ways to kind of deal with the stresses of life. And so we talk a lot about, you know, how stress is just really the cause of all disease. It's the root cause of all disease. And just the profound connection between the mind and body. And this is a super interesting topic, and there is, it's just a short blip in my book, but I give a lot of other resources that discuss it in more detail. But I always think about, you know, this was so important for us throughout our journey with our diagnosis, and it's just important just in life in general to feel not so stressed out. And the modern world really makes it challenging to not feel
really
so
does.
Stressed. Right.
You know it does.
And so, it does.
Yeah.
So how do you de-stress? Is there a step-by-step process we can do something quickly to de-escalate the short fuse that many survivors of brain trauma experience? The fuse is so short sometimes there is no fuse. It just kind of explodes. Is there a way to counter that into a reduced stress level?
Probably the number one thing that I use for stress myself, and I think would probably be helpful to anybody, is just mindfulness, right? I think no matter what ails you, it could be fixed if we wholeheartedly, you know, like some Zen master, applied mindfulness to our life. Because mindfulness makes us come into the present moment. And most of the time when I'm feeling stressed out, I find if I can kind of get still and say, you know, what is it that's bothering me so much right now? It is always that I am rehashing something from the past, or I am concerned or worried about something in the future. And so I'm hypothesizing at that point. And so when I am able to bring myself to the present moment, that all goes away. All that suffering stops because I'm no longer worried about the future. Yeah, all the anxiety, all the stress, all of that stops the moment that I can really bring myself present. And mindfulness-based interventions are becoming really popular, and they have proven efficacy with things like depression and anxiety and addiction. So, you know, it's a chaotic world, and it's really easy to get bogged down with thoughts of the past and fears about the future and get sucked into petty dramas. And when you do that, you're really missing the beauty of the present moment. And so again, for me, I think mindfulness is really the key. And especially in today's world of hustle, where most people are immersed in technology and kind of tend to function on autopilot, bringing their awareness, bringing the awareness to the present moment is just a way of just really ridding all of that stress.
You said
and like after
resonates. Yeah, that's good. Go ahead.
After our diagnosis, it was, I can remember, it was just really easy to worry about the future. You know, was it really gone? Would it come back? All of those kinds of things. But I remember thinking that I didn't want to sit down 20 years in the future, healthy and well, and look back with regret over the fact that I missed the beauty in those years because I was so stuck in fear. And so I often remind myself that right now, in this moment, I'm still breathing. Everything's okay. You know, my kids are good. My husband is good. In fact, the present moment is amazing. And so that's where I try to exist. And that just really, you can imagine that if we could do that all the time, like I said, like some Zen master, you can imagine how peaceful our life would be.
Well, you know, Kelly, you kind of just reminded me of something that it just rings a bell now. When your mind is that clouded with so much stress and just it just seems overwhelming and just you can't really identify. It's just so much happening. It's if you could put on paper like item one, my car is in need of repair. Number two. Mm-hmm. The puppy is sick and needs to go to the vet. And then you realize that's it. Everything else seems to just, that's those only two, put it on paper and look at it. When you see it, it's not as abstract and large in the mind. When you
well,
can
now,
see
wait
the,
a minute. What Kelly was talking about was more like uncertainty because she didn't have a specific thing like a flat tire and a sick animal. She had these uncertainty. I think we talked about this before too, Terry, that the anxiety and stress comes from uncertainty. So she had these questions. When's it going to go? Is it still there? What am I going to do? Will he ever play again? Is he going to walk, jump, skip?
Mm-hmm.
All this stuff that is just noise is basically from my perspective, how I see it, is it's uncertainty. And that brings the chaos of the world and our lives are so busy because one thing, we're busy with technology, but also we have this other stuff going on that we don't know the answer to. When will I go back to work? Is COVID really over? What's going to happen here? And my kids do it all the time. Well, Mom, what's happening? What? And what is this? What is that? And one of our friends said, well, what if a dinosaur falls out of the tree on Tuesday? It's like,
if a dinosaur falls out of a tree?
Yeah. It's like, what if anything? Why are you going on to what if? What if the dinosaur falls out of the tree on Tuesday? You can't do anything about it. But, like, Kelly said, be a Zen master and the chaos of all this uncertainty. Sure, make a list of things you have to do. And I kind of do it as a Groundhog Day. We know what we're going to do every day and what time it is. So, you know, we wake up at this time, we eat lunch, we eat dinner, they get out of school at this time. Every day is Groundhog Day. However, when something changes, then we kind of flex the schedule. But basically, we know what's going to happen. And that gives me and the children and my family some kind of template to work with so we all know what's happening. And I think in the brain injury world, it could be a list. It could be a routine. It could be a timer. It could be your phone. But some kind of way, you've got to organize the noise and not really be worried about this imaginary dinosaur falling out of the tree or all the what if. And that's kind of what I take Kelly's saying.
Well, what you both have said is kind of reflecting back to last month's guest, Susan Shafka,
mm-hmm.
who's the clinical mm-hmm. hypnotherapist, because that leads us into a smooth segue, Kelly, into
mm-hmm.
play number 17, meditation, prayer, and self-hypnosis. So mm-hmm. it's a smooth segue, Michelle, like we were all just saying. How do we find that
right.
zen? So how do we get there? In play number 17, meditation, prayer, self-hypnosis. What does that mean for us, Kelly?
Well, I think that meditation, whatever you want to call it, meditation, prayer, self-hypnosis, and I talk about how they're really very overlapped and synonymous. And what a tremendous way to relax the body, spark your immune system, get some stillness. The benefits of meditation, again, affect you at a cellular level. It's really profound if you can do it, you know. And I learned to meditate when I was young, long before it was trendy. And so I've been doing it for many, many years. But I know from just talking to so many people, there are lots of different ways to meditate. There's so many different kinds of meditation out there now. But meditative practices can be found in nearly every religion, you know, from Buddhism to Judaism to Christianity. And it covers a wide range of practices. And so some people like to do, you know, chanting meditation. Some people like to focus on their breath.
On their
some
what?
People like to do on their breath.
Breathing. Breathing.
Oh, breath.
Breathing.
Okay.
Breath. Yes, breath, yes.
Okay.
The benefits of meditation, I think, are well proven. And it's just, it's a calming medicine for the mind, body, and spirit is really the best way to describe it. And when we keep our bodies in balance, our bodies have a really remarkable way of healing themselves. They know exactly what to do. God blessed us with this amazing body, and it just really helps to reduce the stress that we feel. And prayer, too, I think, you know, prayer is very meditative and calming and restorative. So I think you probably have a lot of listeners, and I don't know in the world of brain trauma if that's a common thing, that if people use a lot of meditation. If
it's suggested.
Helpful.
Yes, it is. It's highly suggested because it's as you've been saying. I mean, but I was more interested in the self hypnosis part. That really struck a nerve because we just did a show last month with a clinical hypnotherapist, and she tried to give us some insight into how to do it with the self hypnosis state. But with you having it as one of the play numbers, I thought you might be able to give us a little bit more detail of how we can redirect those neurons when we get off track or obsessed or compulsive or manic or whatever the manifesting result of brain injury. How do we get it back on track with self-hypnosis? What does that mean, actually? I mean, how do we ground ourselves?
The way that I have used meditation or self-hypnosis in the past is that, you know, I think that we have to realize that, you know, humans use a very small, very easily accessible part of their brain, right, or the conscious mind. And so, you know, there are we do have these deep-rooted beliefs and feelings and actions that are rooted more in the subconscious mind. You know, so I always give the example of, you know, if you've been driving along and you kind of realize you weren't really paying attention, but you got there anyway, safe, all in one piece, and you're like, how did I get here? I don't remember.
That,
did I stop at that
yes.
stoplight? You know,
yes.
Those things happen all the time, right? And that's because your subconscious takes over, right? So the conscious mind is completely unaware of all of your saved memories. You know, but every detail of every experience is stored in that subconscious. It's just a little more difficult to access. But it's really where all the magic happens, is in that subconscious. So meditation, and very specifically hypnosis, allows us to access that subconscious where we can implant the messages that we want to live. We can spark our immune system. We can reduce stress. We can heal our body. We can connect with God, with our spirit. During meditation, our unconscious mind is very relaxed. It's wide open to become one with whatever we are focusing on. So, you know, when I meditate, I do a lot of visualizations, you know, where I'll visualize in great detail whatever my goals are, whatever I'm trying to manifest. And so these things are very, very powerful. It's a very powerful way for us to kind of trigger goal attainment. And our mood and our demeanor can easily be elevated through these very focused meditations. So when we visualize love and kindness, you know, we do a lot of love and kindness meditations. We feel love and we feel kindness. And I talk about in the book, when I was young, my dad bought me tickets. A friend and I went to a show, to like a local theater, a little tiny theater where there was a stage hypnotist. And this was probably maybe around 1980 or so. So before any of the, you know, before a yoga lifestyle was trendy. In fact, I think it was probably a little bit eccentric back then, especially we lived in rural Ohio.
Hippies even, but, right?
Right. So I can remember, though, you know, I was young and I watched this hypnotist and it was kind of in awe of this show. You know, he was kind of like randomly choosing people and bringing them onto the stage. And then he would put them into a trance like in seconds, you know, and it was what you would think, you know, it was like the pendulum and snapping his fingers and things like that. And the next thing you know, they thought they were naked in public or they just won the lottery or something like that. It was super entertaining. It was really, really entertaining. But I was convinced at that age that those were all part of the show. Like they were volunteers, they were staged, they were put there. You know, even at that young age, I was like, well, this is a gimmick. This was just for entertainment. But several years later, I went to another show, and I watched someone that I knew get up on the stage. Oh. And in that moment, I was like, huh. Right? I was a little puzzled, like, wait a minute. This might actually be for real. So, several years went by, and I was going to work with my dad. I remember he took me to work with him, and he was an attorney at the time. And I remember I went to court with him, and I don't even remember exactly what the case was, because there was something far more important, and that was that they had a hypnotist that had worked with the person on the stand. And the prosecuting attorney, I remember, was questioning an eyewitness to a crime, and she explained that she had briefly seen a getaway car, but she wasn't able to notate the license plate because she was talking about, you know, just all happened so fast. And so she went on to explain that, you know, they had her work with this hypnotist, and under hypnosis, she was able to read off the license plate number, and they went out and made this arrest. And so then they had the hypnotist take the stand, and the hypnotist explained how the mind stores every little experience. And the problem is that people just don't know how to access this part of their mind. So, but under hypnosis, you know, he was able to kind of help her access that, and that's how they were able to get this plate, the license plate information.
Wow.
And in that moment, I was like, wow, this is cool, right? I mean, in that moment, I knew that
the mind is
a
terrible
thing.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
That's in a courtroom sterile environment. So maybe if we're doing it for self-hypnosis, maybe at home with candles or in nature with waterfall, or is there something you recommend for us to find this zen from self-hypnosis?
I have a little yoga room in my house, but I love to do anything outdoors. I mean, you can really get still when you're sitting at the beach. We have all these beautiful beaches here in Florida, or, you know, in the forest or under the oak tree or the mountains
nature.
Or in the grassy
nature.
Knoll, anywhere in nature.
I
always say, take your shoes off and feel the grass, you know, feel the earth under your feet.
It's funny. I'm feeling happy with you just describe. I feel the happiness in what you're describing, feeling everything you're saying is making me happier just sitting here. So, yeah,
aww.
I can feel that happiness. So I don't want to keep you all night, but I am excited to hear play number 20. And that's something that health and nutrition, because we all, I think, to some degree, are a little negligent or somehow not on the right path. Some are, but I think most of us deviate so much that we're not good in that area. What can you give us to help us keep us happy in health and nutrition?
Play
number 20.
I learned a lot about nutrition after our diagnosis. You know, it's funny because before the diagnosis, I would have told you we ate really healthy. You know, I would have been like, oh, we eat healthy. We watch what we eat. We eat organic here and there, you know. And this was back when, you know, I thought Chick-fil-A was incredibly healthy because it seems like it's not really fast food. Like it's, and I still love Chick-fil-A. But,
I think that now. Are we thinking we're on track?
I
hear a butt coming. We're thinking wrong.
Go get the kale salad and the grilled chicken.
That's right. They do have that kale salad, which is delicious, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned so much about nutrition because, you know, we truly are what we eat. And nutrition became kind of the focal point of our treatment that we did. We did a very integrative program, and so nutrition was for us, juicing was a real centerpiece for us.
Oh,
and my
wow.
son still juices. He still juices twice a day.
Now, by juicing, you mean like taking actual fruit or vegetables and making it liquid?
Yes. That's exactly
okay.
it. And it's the most amazing thing because I would take this huge bowl of fruits and vegetables, which my son could never possibly eat in a day, but I would throw them in the juicer and he's going to drink it before he goes off to school. So it's like I would feel so good knowing that he was leaving the house having had probably more antioxidants than most people get in a week, you know, and he just had them before he left for school each day. So juicing is a way to just really...
Can you help us get more specific? Like what? Broccoli and what, for example?
Yeah. I'll tell you exactly what we did. So I actually visited a place called Hippocrates Health Spa, which is actually near Miami. And they are famous for a juicing program that they have, and they have a lot of cancer patients there. And it's like a residential program that you can go to and stay and live there. And then, I mean, people have visited from all over the world. A lot of famous people have gone there. But they have sort of a little protocol that they use for their juicing. And that's what we used for a really long time, and we stuck to it. But they do a lot of sprouts and wheatgrass. So we still do wheatgrass, broccoli sprouts, sunflower sprouts, and pea sprouts.
Sunflower sprouts are delicious, I'll let you know. I've had that before. They're delicious.
Right. They mix a lot of cucumber in with theirs and some lemon juice they'll put in theirs. But we put, you know, and like ginger and turmeric are another, you know, some herbs that you can put in. But that's kind of sort of the focal point of what we do. We now add in some fruits to make it taste a little bit better. For a long time, we didn't do any fruit at all because of the sugar, and cancer loves sugar. So we stayed away from all things sugar, even natural sugars, for several years. And then we started to gradually add in some, you know, my son really loves pineapple in his. It kind of drowns out the taste of those of the wheatgrass, which is pretty potent. It's very earthy if you've never had it before. It's very, very earthy tasting.
It tastes like grass.
Yep, like grass.
It tastes green. It tastes green. I've had it before. It tastes green. If a color has a taste, wheatgrass tastes green. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
well, I'm
no,
curious. Now, when you say juicer, is a juicer different than a blender? Could you put the blender on liquefy,
yes.
Or is a juicer
no.
a separate machine?
So a blender will make great smoothies, right? So like, you know, thick smoothies, but you can't get nearly the concentration that you can in juice. So juice, we have a cold pressed juice, so I put it in there, and it's called a masticating juicer. There's two different kinds of juicers. There's a masticating juicer or a centrifuge juicer. Masticating juicers will handle sprouts and the things that we use, whereas the centrifuge juicer won't do sprouts. And so we have to have it. It's a little harder to clean and things like that, but we like to have those sprouts in our diet. So a lot of people have both,
for
when they're in a hurry.
From the juicing. I did get away from the juicing. We did that for a while. And that the cleaning really just was difficult. So, I mean, it's worth it.
It's a total pain.
It's
a total pain to clean. What I do is I cheat. I have a lot of spare parts. So, because if I have to go clean a juicer, I'm like, ah. But if I know I got spare parts, I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to put on clean parts, and I'll go ahead and juice it. So I always recommend, you know, buy some spare parts so that you'll juice. But I always tell people the right juicer to buy is the one you're going to use. So if the masticating juicer is too much of a pain to clean, then just get a centrifuge one. The thing is, get it in your tummy, you know, get some juice in there, some of God's fruits and vegetables. It's all good. So juicing is kind of, you know, the centerpiece of what we used. But I think the studies are pretty interesting. They study the blue zones, which are the regions of the world where people live the longest.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the highest concentrations of sedentarians or people over the age of 100. And those people have a lot of things in common when they look at those people. And, of course, the number one thing they have in common is diet, and their diet is plant-based. And so they also, most of those people that live in those blue zones have a spiritual practice. They have close relationships. And they eat a lot of things like mushrooms, and they drink a lot of green teas and things like that. So when we're doing those things, when we're eating a plant-based diet and we're drinking some tea and we're doing the stress reduction, I just kind of felt like we were on the right track, you know, because these – you got to kind of look to these sedentarians for some guidance. So that's kind of the – did I answer your questions, Terry?
Well, yeah, I think you did. I'm just fascinated with the road to happiness, because I know that the gut and the mind and the brain are connected. So how well we treat our gut is directly going to affect how well our minds operate. So I wanted you to kind of help us in that when I saw that as one of the plays to happiness, because I know that in theory it sounds wonderful. It's the application that I have difficulty with. For single, I mean, not that married people eat better than single people, but for those of us who are the single life, I mean, eating is a difficult chore. I mean, it's something that, you know, it's sort of liquefying. It makes it sound easier, even when you can dump a load of vegetables.
In theory, it is.
Yeah.
But
so it's a matter of now applying that.
It's
about applying
it.
Right.
You're growing the sprouts. You're buying 10 pounds of carrots and it can be intense. Now, this program that you did, you said it was in Florida, Hippocrates.
The Hippocrates. Yes, it's called
program.
Hippocrates. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. I try to cut corners as much as I can too. So, like the sprouts, I have them delivered to my door every week. And they come from a place called Got Sprouts in Florida. They're beautiful sprouts. They stay fresh super long. They're organically grown, and they come right to my door. So, you know, I try to do things, and I do things in big batches, too. The other thing I'll do is I juice in the morning, and I'll air seal the evening juice. So I'll juice, and I seal them, and then they're good. You know, they're good for a couple of days. We usually drink them within 24 hours, but I always try to cut as many quarters. And like I said, the extra parts. And I also wash all my produce as soon as I get home from the grocery store. Because again, if I'm like, I gotta juice, I gotta wash it, and I gotta clean it, and then I'm like, forget it. The next thing you know, I'm sitting on the couch
drinking a Coke.
Chips, and yeah, it's all out the door. So I try to wash them and just have them ready in there, ready to go. You know, if I do
so
it right after
prep.
I get back from the grocery store.
It's planning.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we were talking about before. Of knowing what you're going to do, have a plan, have a routine, and she's cutting corners, but she's cutting corners that help her stick to the plan. And you know what's going on. You know you're getting your sprouts on Wednesday. You know that you've got a spare base for your juicer. You know that the veggies in the fridge are washed.
Right.
You just grab it. So things that you can do to make your life easier will help organize your future, organize your day, and give you that sense of certainty that makes the noise of the busy life go away or just calm it down.
The flooding.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
So I think that leads naturally into the next portion of good nutrition, and that's exercise, because that's play number 21 of your keys to happiness. So after trauma, some of us aren't able to move as fluently as others. How would you recommend someone who is not quite as mobile to get exercise?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when my son was going through his surgeries and things like that, I mean, he definitely, you know, there are different stages, and he gradually had to very much work his way back to getting to a place where he was fully mobile. And I think, you know, he did a lot of physical therapy, obviously, and a lot of exercising on his own and things like that, and kind of figuring things out. But I think exercise, you know, and I think I mentioned earlier, he's studying to be a physical therapist now, and he always tells me every day, he tells me, Mom, you got to get out from behind the desk, because sitting is the new smoking. So he always says, would you smoke a cigarette today? Then get up and go exercise. So he's really realized how important exercise is to our overall health, that we just have to find a way to move our body. And you can do that in such a variety of ways. And there's so many gentle forms of exercise now. At that Hippocrates spa, I actually was introduced to Tai Chi, which is sort of like, I feel like it's a cross between yoga. It's kind of like a movement, a gentle exercise that, you know, involves some meditative movement. It's just a really beautiful way to start your day, or even to end your day in the evening. But, you know, I find that just about anybody can do it, or can do an altered version of it. You know, you can kind of modify the movements, but it's very relaxing, and yet really it does really exercise and give your body a good stretch. The blue zones, we talked about all the longevity studies, and we talk about those. Most of the people who live in those zones, they don't think of exercise as a hobby like we do, like where we work all day and then we go to the gym for an hour. They actually, you know, movement is part of their, it is part of their day. It's like
it's
what they do all day long. It's a lifestyle, right?
Yes.
And so that is, again, you know, when we look to them for advice, it's like movement becomes very, very important. And
well,
it changes your mood.
Your body in motion stays in motion. A body at rest, rests in peace.
Right.
Get
it? Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, Kelly, I think that you have 30 more, and there's so many more keys here. So get the book, audience, read the book, and get more insight to ways of finding happiness, because ultimately, happiness is, in my personal opinion, is the most elusive, the most expensive, the most priceless thing we can possibly obtain on this planet. People work and earn billions of dollars and can't find it sometimes. I mean, it's something that's so elusive that it's almost mystical. But happiness, it's happiness. And finding it is like the gift that we're here to get. When we find that happiness, that's the joy of life. So, Kelly, thank you for writing a book to help us find it, because I think that makes a difference in this world. I mean, everyone is going to die of something. The question is, how do you want to live? So we find happiness as the way to go. So we cherish your work, and we cherish you for spending so much time talking with us, sharing with our audience your insights and your experience with your son and your family and what you guys have gone through and overcome. And thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes.
How many did we cover, Terry? We'll have to have her like 10 more times. You only covered 4 or 5.
Well, we have to let our audience. We'd like to have, you can come on the show anytime, but we don't want to give every detail away. The audience has to have something to purchase and so that her book is useful and put to the register. You know? So
thank you so much for having me. Yes, thank you.
Yes, Kelly.
Thank you so much for writing the book.
Find your happy. Now, is there any other contact information you'd like to share with our audience? Is there a website or any other directive to how to reach you?
There is a website. It's called findyourstrong.info. Findyourstrong.info.
Find your
so that is a website. It's more of just an educational website where we just kind of share the treatment that we use, the regimen, kind of all the things we wish we would have known the day we were diagnosed. So it's just really basically an educational site. There is a link to the book on there as well.
Find your strong dot what? What was it?
Info.info.
Info.info.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Findyourstrong.info. And the name of the book is Find Your Happy, 30 Life-Changing Keys, A Holistic Approach to Get Your Happy On by Kelly McClintock, M.A.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kelly, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, and we look forward to future books. Are there any future in the works for you?
We are working on a companion workbook that will go with this book. So we are working on that right now.
Okay. Well, when you're in production or when you're ready to release, give us a contact. Let us know. We'll get you back on the show.
I sure will. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Kelly. All right. You have
All right.
a great
Bye-bye.
Evening.
Have a great night.
You too. Bye. Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye.
All right, Michelle.
My friend sent me something. Not all storms come to disrupt your life. Some come to clear your path. That's from my friend in L.A. who's listening tonight. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So that's kind of what Kelly was talking about. We talked about so many things.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, it's easy to lose your happy after you lose your function,
health,
your
vitality,
brain,
memory, whatever.
Finding happy becomes a challenge. But there are methods. I mean, obviously there's steps we can take. So, I mean, I hope we've given our audience some hope and guidance, even, because we want all, like your grandmother said, we want all of your pain to be champagne. Not that
champagne,
we want you to be alcoholics or drink too much, but you get the point there. We don't want you to be in pain. We want you happy, because this is a stage and we're in the audience and on the stage at the same time. That's what we do here in this world, it seems. But Michelle, I think that we've covered the first part, which is find your happy. Now the mm-hmm. second part is keeping your happy. That's the thing.
Oh, that's probably a little bit more work.
Yeah, and we have the 15 minutes left to talk about it. But for the next 30 seconds, we're going to give BIAUSA.org another shout out for the next 35 seconds. We'll be right back.
Research, treatment, and support speed recovery for the more than 2.5 million children and adults who sustain traumatic brain injuries in the United States each year. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. Support research and better access to care and let people with brain injuries know that they are not alone. Call 1-800-444-6443 or visit www.biausa.org to learn more about brain injury.
BIAUSA.org. Find help near you. Well, Michelle, I think that Kelly kind of makes us want to dance or do something. I feel like I want to be happy.
She makes me want a juice. She wants,
makes
me
want to make
wanna
some
go
healthy
and
food.
Find my juicer.
Yeah, exercise and socialize, and I mean there are ways. We just have to, you know, I think a lot of after trauma we get so caught up in the trauma itself that we lose sight that there's more in life. There is more than the trauma, and we have to get up and get out and go into the world and take those steps that Kelly outline.
Yeah, you're right, like what she said. My friend just told me that she's having Wellness Wednesday. She does this thing online where she speaks for a minute and gives you tips and just directs you, kind of just that gentle pushing towards happiness, towards you're enough, towards you're good, towards positivity. And I think maybe a lot of people that are suffering or struggling could use that little bit of a push or
what's
positive
her information?
Influence.
What do you have her information?
Well, this is, well, I'll let her. She needs to tell me it's okay, but we need to probably have her on. Because
yeah,
has,
let's have her on. Definitely invite her to call
wellness.
This girl. Let's
talk to her.
Yeah, because we need anybody who wants to help spread positive energy in this world. We definitely need. Because we can all use some more of that.
Now, it's at, I'll tell you, it's on Instagram, thinkla.org or at Andrea LWG. So thinkla.org. That's on Instagram.
Thinkla.org. Okay. All right. We have someone on the switchboard here talking to us. In fact, let me say hello. Hello, we
okay.
will talk about it. We will mention this. This person online saying, we will say something, we will say something. I'm writing on the computer. He said, he says, if you're in search of happiness, find people and watch. It's
yeah.
about who you allow around you. It's hard to see, but this is a team of voices, and he's suggesting to just go out and even if you don't, I guess, and if you don't interact, this is something I've done. I've actually wanting just because I'm such a loner, a recluse almost. I will go out and sit in a corner of a public place and like almost a fly on the wall, if you will, and just observe all the energy and the people, and I'll take notes on the characters of the people in the room. As a writer, that's something I can excuse it as an eccentric way of creating story development, but it's also a way of socializing without actually interacting with the people. So a team of voices,
yeah,
that's a good idea.
Well, you know what I did one year, and I did, I mean, I listened to Andrea on her little radio, her podcast quite a lot. The thinkla.org. But what I did one year, I couldn't think of, you know, it's New Year's and resolutions and all that time and, oh, I'm going to exercise, oh, I'm going to eat right. I never did any of that. So I thought, why am I going to let myself down again? Why don't I do something I can do? And I started contacting people. So I made an effort to call somebody I hadn't spoken to, just go through my phone book and call and say, hey, how are you doing? Haven't talked to you in a while. And I did that every week. And sometimes I would call two or three people. But by the end of the year, if you call two people a week, that's 100 people you've contacted. So that was my way of finding my tribe, so to speak. I don't know if you want to call it a tribe. But I was able to contact other humans and get that, you know. And it's free. You just call.
That fits. Yeah. I tend to have small, one, two, maybe three people in the world, if that many.
Well, that's what Kelly talked about, your inner circle and your outer circle. And so there are people that you talk to maybe every day, twice a day, a parent, a spouse, or something like that, that's like in your inner circle that you very close contact with on a regular basis. And right, there's only going to be two or three people, maybe five, but it's really small. And Kelly mentioned that. She mentions it in her book about the way she describes it. I get a ring. I see little circles. And so in the very center, it's very small, but those are the people that are closest to you. And then they get further and further out. So that kind of ties in what you were saying. But if you're not wanting to see people face-to-face or you've got maybe a fear of going out, certainly use the technology, Zoom, meetings, FaceTime, your phone call, video chat, all of those things, you know. I don't feel comfortable a lot of times going out on dates and in closed places. I like to go, I don't know, I'm that's why I'm going to Toronto. I'm trying my best.
I'm trying to travel.
I'm making myself, so I don't know.
Well, you know, it's about finding the happiness. It's different for everyone, I guess. Each of us has our own desire for what makes us happy. So I guess our approach to finding that varies as much.
Yes, and it's not. I would say I didn't say this when she was on the phone. It's not so hard to find yourself and go down a non-happy road. You know, to end up and say, oh, how did I get here? But if you're conscious, that mindfulness that Kelly spoke of, being mindful, making conscious decisions, and thinking quietly, meditating, figuring things out.
You know what, that makes sense. My problem with doing that is the execution of it. I mean, in theory, yeah, it makes sense. I think, okay, this is what I need to do logically. This is profound, but when it comes to the execution of it, it becomes virtually impossible. You become like catatonic almost, just frozen, stuck there and looking at the clothes you might put on to go out and do something. But something inside you just won't let you reach to the clothes to get dressed. So it becomes a challenge, but you keep working on it. And that's what I've learned over the years. If you keep working on it, it can happen. You will get the shirt off the hanger and you'll put it on and you'll put on the pants and the shoes or whatever and go out. And that's
those new pathways
process
we talked about.
Yes.
You know, your brain is very resilient and you're stronger than you know. And the adversity and difficult times build character.
Well,
and you'll find out how strong you are. Mm-hmm.
In fact, I want to make sure, I want to see if our writer is listening to the show. I'm asking him if he's listening or she is listening to, are you listening to the show? Because this person is talking about what he's going, I think it's a he, listening to the show. but he's on the computer saying that he's been through everything's being replaced, the knees, the hips, etc., and he can set off a metal detector 50 feet away.
It's like a bionic man.
Yeah. So, you know, because no matter what we go through, even this fellow who's on the internet chatting with us on the studio switchboard, he's listening to the show. So, and it's a he. Yes, it's a he. And he's saying that he's lost weight. The titanium is lighter than bone. So, since they're replacing so many of his bones, that he's a lot that caused weight reduction. So, but it's still, he's living hard, but he's playing hard. So he's finding happiness too. So it goes to show that no matter what we go through, we like you said, you and Kelly earlier, it's about perseverance and continuing.
Right, and focusing on what you can do.
Doing
and not
what, you,
what
can.
You can't do or what you've lost. I've lost
right.
the ability to do this. You may get it back. You may have another ability. You may be able to train those pathways in practice. It's not easy. It's a full-time job learning to walk again, learning to speak again.
Learning
and
to socially interact again. For
learning
some of
to
us.
Be with people. Learning
yes.
to go inside an airplane and ride and be with people, go on a date, all of those things, you know, we're out of practice with COVID. We don't see each other.
Yeah. We've become quite the non-touching society now.
That's right. That's right. Agoraphobic unite. We're all going on Zoom. So,
yeah.
You know, but, I mean, you know, there's good and bad. We're learning to do things a different way. And those who will adapt and change will succeed. And those who stick to the old ways and look backwards will become extinct. That's just how it is.
So we must keep moving forward. That's it. Move forward.
Move forward. Mm-hmm.
Well, Michelle,
move forward,
I think
looking for our happiness.
I think that Kelly was right on time tonight because I'm sure there's someone in our audience who can identify with what we talked about tonight. But I especially needed to hear that tonight because I am going through an awful lot in my personal life, as you know. But we all are.
We'll talk
we
about
are
that
all
in the
battling
future,
some
yeah.
type of issue and carrying some type of weight. So finding happiness is the perfect timing. Thank you, Kelly, if you're still listening or if you're out there listening to an archived show. Thank you for coming on tonight, sharing with us your book and your motivation for writing it, your son. And I'm glad that he's better and that the gratitude from that is that it motivated you to write a book that might help other people, that will help other people.
Right, which he never would have written without the
suffering,
suffering and adversity, right?
Yes.
The difficulty and struggle put her towards, changed her trajectory. Now, listen, Wednesday, be sure to listen to that thinkla.org because it's about the importance of exercise on the mind and body, which goes to what Kelly was talking about. And what we're talking about, strengthening the brain, the mind, positive thoughts, being grateful, gratitude, all of that goes together.
Okay, now you said Wednesday. When on Wednesdays?
Well, you can go to the that thinkla.org anytime, but I think just on Wednesday they have a special wellness discussion. And
okay.
So, yeah, so any day.
All right.
It's all positive.
All right.
It's all great.
All right.
But
well, Michelle,
on
we have,
Wednesday, it's going to be aligned with what we're talking about. So,
well, hey, we have a minute left. So let's get findyourstrong.info to reach Kelly McClintock and find out more about her and her book, Find Your Happy. ThinkLA.org
mm-hmm.
for well-being, life well-being. And we'd like to thank again. No? What did I mess it up? What was it?
What are you thanking? Well, we've got to thank you did Craig Cecilia and the people for the network.
Yeah, Craig Cecilia Network, Kim Justice, Kelly KJ Jones, Dr. Valentina, Surviving Head Trauma. Order the book anywhere books are sold. And the website, terrysmithbooks.com. Facebook page, Surviving Head Trauma. Michelle and Terry, every fourth Thursday of the month, 10 p.m. until midnight Eastern Standard Time. 10 seconds left, Michelle. You want to say anything special for our audience?
I'm grateful for you, Terry, and this show. You make me so happy, all of you.
Oh, thank you.
Love you.
I love you, and I love our audience. And Kelly, thank you. And it's been a beautiful month, another month we've done. So until next month,
that's right.
We say good night.
See you in June, and get better, Angela. We'll see you next month.
Yes, next month, everyone. Good night.